This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
Really, there's no better way to spend the mid-morning afternoon than oysters and mimosas at Michelle's house. And this is Michelle. She is an independent and powerful woman in many respects. And I'll just say that just so you know. I don't want to describe her too much because I don't want to make her blush, but she's lovely. And we were just talking about feminism and sexiness and how some people think that feminism is, you know, they associate it with like anti-porn feminism, for instance, or, you know, sex negative, like women who believe that all, you know, that all sex is exploitative. And like, that's kind of how, you know, feminism gets a bad name. Like people think that all feminists are man haters. And we were thinking, okay, well, actually, you know, feminism has some interesting things to teach women, and maybe even feminism leads to better sex.
Absolutely. I think it does. I think feminism is empowerment. Feminism may have had a bad name, but for me, feminism gives me the right to do whatever I want. It lets me be as strong as, I guess, I don't know, to say typically a man or traditionally a man. But I've never really thought of feminism as something that is a negative or that makes me not sexy or not womanly or not girly or, you know, not pretty or whatever.
Well, I think people think of the word feminazi, you know, like you're kind of man hating, like, oh, I hate all men, and I'm only going to be a lesbian from now on and I want to kill you. But for me, feminism really led to me feeling empowered and authentic and honestly playing with my own clitoris, you know, which was really helpful in actually beginning to have orgasms when I was having sex, which made me want to have sex more often, you know. So feminism can be very sexy.
Right. Or orgasm when you're not with someone else and having orgasms with yourself. Yeah. Feminism just lets me be who I am. I don't know if I even think of it as feminism. It just lets me be a woman, a strong woman, an independent woman. But at the same time, you know, I have a partner and we're dependent on each other for certain things and we share everything together. But before I was with my partner, let me take a step back. Before I was with my partner, I acquired things in my life. You know, I have a good job. I work hard. I own a home. And I did a lot of that on my own. But because I have a lot of confidence in myself, it allows me to share that. And I think that's feminism, sharing what I have with people, letting people know that anyone can accomplish this. And feminism is just, you know, growing and understanding yourself and being strong and powerful and whatever you want to be.
Right. And I think that sometimes we get a little bit lost in the polarization and some of the negative effects of polarization. Because I think at the beginning of feminism, since women were thinking, oh, it's men who are the oppressors or whatever, and so it's I have to fight against men. But it's not really men, like the men who are alive today, that came up with the oppressive ideas that made, you know, women in the role of women like subservient to men. And it wasn't really the men who are alive today that decided, oh, that the only way that women can serve God is through serving their husband and children. You know what I mean? Because that's definitely a message that's out there, right?
Absolutely. Well, but the origins of feminism, there was a reason for it. Women were oppressed and women didn't have the same rights. So women had to stand up and be tough and strong and do all those things that broke through barriers and made them equal to men, you know, glass ceilings, which still exist to some extent today. But there was a purpose for it. And the definition of original feminism versus what I think feminism is today is completely different. You know, in time, things change. When women didn't have equal rights, we had to forge our way. We had to prove that we were just as good as men. We had to be tougher and we had to be stronger. And we had to have that, you know, front appearance that made us tougher.
The ball busting. And the aggressive in business.
Well, and you know, and that exists today because I've worked in companies where senior women executives have had to be, you know, tough like men. But I've also been very fortunate to work in companies where my senior executives are beautiful, feminine, lovely women who are tough and strong and amazing at what they do. And they don't have to act like men to get things done. They're women, and they're just as good as their male counterparts. But that's the evolution of feminism. Today, being a feminist is something very different than it was 30 years ago.
Do you think that some people don't want to identify as feminists?
Possibly. Honestly, I've never really thought about that in such a specific question. I've never really defined myself as a feminist, but I guess if you were to look at the way I live my life and the way I am and how I live and everything that I have, I am a feminist. I do it on my own. I have a partner and I rely on him. But if God forbid something happened, I would still have to continue on my own. So that's feminism, being able to take care of yourself and being able to take care of your partner and have a life with your friends and your family and being strong and independent. But today, feminism, I do think it's different.
What I think is interesting is some people think that men and women now are completely equal and there's no more work to be done.
There's a lot more work to be done because there are still those women who feel that they have to be that ball buster at the top. And, you know, they have to come across and being more masculine than feminine. But like I said, I've been very fortunate to have women in my life who are senior executives in big Fortune 500 companies, and they are beautiful and feminine and girly, but powerful and strong. You don't have to take on those ball buster attributes to get things done. You have to be smart. You have to know what you want, and you have to go after it, and you have to be believable. And that's feminism to me.
That is interesting because something that I've realized about myself as I'm getting older, like one of the things I'm really celebrating is I'm like, oh, not only do I know what I want, but now I have more resources to get it. And that's what I love about, you know, that's what I loved about turning 30. That's what I loved about turning 35. You know what I mean? It's so exciting to be like, I know what I want.
Yeah. And so when I was in my 30s, that was like the awakening that anything is possible. And now I'm in my 40s. And yeah, the world is at my fingertips.
Yeah.
Anything I want, I can make happen. And I can make it happen the way I want it to happen. Nobody has to define the way it should be. There is no should be. You just go for it. The other thing that's kind of interesting is, so being in the workforce for, let's see now, over 20 years. When I first started out, I felt like women were competing with women.
Right.
And I hated that. So I was like, I don't understand. Why am I competing with women? Why aren't we banding together? And that's feminism, when you band together. And I want other women to succeed. I don't want to see other women fail so I can succeed. Right. The more we help each other and the more we band together, the better we'll be. And that's today's feminism, that women are supporting women and women are believing in women and there's less competition. At least I hope there is. And I'm feeling that more as I move forward in my career.
I think there are a lot of projects like that, though, like Fem Talks. Jessica Hadari is doing a project that's something like a ripe paradigm or something, women of a ripe paradigm. And it's this whole community of women supporting women in peer educating kind of classes and retreats. And even if it's just like a detox day or a seminar or, you know, something like that, or even like a craft night, you know, where someone's like sharing, or a clothing swap, you know, and there's so many different ways that women can support each other in business, in living our real lives.
Yeah. And I mean, mentoring people who are, you know, friends and colleagues, there's just so many things that we can do. And that's what I'm finding really rewarding now, that I'm not in competition with other women. These are my peers. These are my support group. And right now, I have more women friends than I ever have. I am closer to women than I've ever been in my life. And I'm loving it. It's fantastic.
And the other good thing about not seeing women as competition, you can see them as allies and friends, but you could also see them as totally hot babes.
Absolutely, which is, you know, relatively new to me, but I'm loving the totally hot babe part.
I know. It's like, hey, we could make out. We're not competing with this guy for his attention. We could like
share.
It's even better.
Absolutely. Yeah, the sharing. You know, I'm more confident now. Confidence is feminism. Belief in yourself is feminism. Trust in yourself and knowing that what you're doing is the right thing every single day, that's feminism. And I think everyone defines it differently, and that's okay. But really, just going for it, that's feminism.
See, feminism does. It leads to threesomes and better sex and all sorts of good stuff.
Yes, it does.
And confidence. Yay.
Yay. And confidence after a threesome.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to have like the sobbing after the threesome thing. It could be like, oh, that was awesome. You're fun. Thank you.
Let's do it again.
Exactly. Exactly. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you, Monica.
It is a beautiful sunny day and we are at an oysters and mimosas party. And kids, you can try this at home. This would be something that if you have a sunny day and a patio and some bubbly, woo, oysters and mimosas and sunglasses and sparkling water, it's very good for whatever you did Friday night. And I'm sitting here with two sex positive feminists, Ginger Murray from Whore Magazine, founder of Whore Magazine, and Fleur de Lis SF, also known as Vanessa Pinto, who is San Francisco's sluttiest blogger. Some Huffington Post articles, very interesting, that you could Google. We were thinking about how sex positive work, it's really not easy. You know, you don't do it because your mom wants you to. So we were thinking about like what draws us to this work? Why do we do it? What sorts of experiences have we had that make us feel like this is the work that we are called to do? Ginger?
Well, my favorite story about that is both my mother and my grandmother now do want me to do this.
Yay!
They're a big, huge supporter of the magazine. They both bought subscriptions. And what has resulted in that, which is really amazing and confirms why I'm doing it, is I have now had very open conversations about their sexuality with both my mother and my grandmother.
Yes.
My grandmother is currently 78 years old and having the best sex of her life. She's in love. She's traveling around. She's having a marvelous time. And to bond as women and as family members and to feel no shame about exploring sexuality at different ages and in different circumstances is amazing to me. And I think that I would love that to be true for everyone, that they could talk to their mom about the confusion or the excitement or the fun or what she likes or what she's figuring out. And I don't see any reason in the world why you can't accept that our parents like to get down.
Amen, sister.
And our grandparents.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny because when I first talked to my mother about doing a radio show about sex, she was like, oh, can't you just talk about something nice? And I was like, Mom.
My mother said that.
Really? Sex is nice.
It really is.
I know. But see, the thing is like for so long, I think we haven't been able to talk about sex. And that's what actually makes sex not nice. You know, is because we are not talking about it, so it becomes dangerous. You know, there's less education out there. What was your definition of sex as an adolescent? It was, you know, you were like, oh, I don't even know how that works or gets in there. And then can I say no? And, you know, there's just so much lack of empowerment and information when you're not able to talk about it. So that's why it's important that we do this kind of work, you know? And talk with our grandmothers about sex.
And talk with our grandmothers. And actually, there was a really, really great article in New York Magazine about this. One teacher who is running a whole class with the students that it's not just about sex education. It's very thorough. But it's also about sex should be fun and sex should be good and you should enjoy it as well. And so part of the class is about that. And of course, invariably, it's caused a huge controversy. And it was really amazing in the editorial section, the letters that people wrote in. This person, who is also an educator, talked very, you know, intelligently about all the issues with sexuality and sex trafficking and all of this. And she's like, and I really think that that's just more important than telling kids that sex is fun. And I was like, did you actually write that? Did you actually just see yourself in print saying that?
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, there's so many serious issues and people are hurting about this that it being fun. It's beside the point and unimportant.
Well, I think if we were having sex and it was fun and we realized that it was supposed to be fun and that women, particularly women, realized that I should be having fun or either A, I'm not doing this or I need to find a way to make it fun and empower myself to experience pleasure, then we wouldn't be in a place where women are feeling forced into sex because of some kind of relationship that they're having or that they don't know how to have fun or that they feel shamed because they're having sex. And so they, do you know what I mean? Like there would be just so much, I mean, if all sex were fun, we wouldn't have to worry about the horrible consequences of, you know, sex that isn't even sex. It's, you know, it's non-consensual. So it's not even about pleasure and connection. It's just about power. So
exactly. And we would like a lot less of that and a lot more of the fun.
Yeah. And it's funny how, you know, often sex education is about plumbing, reproduction, and fallopian tubes and vas deferens. And that isn't so meaningful, I think, to kids. I mean, I think what would be more meaningful is broadening the definition of sex and also talking about, you know, these are ways where you can share pleasure, but without, you know, going all the way or, you know, the baby steps, not making, you know, because I remember when I was an adolescent, I was so thinking about sex as doing it that it, you kind of missed all the steps along the way. So Vanessa, sex isn't easy, right? Sexual freedom isn't easy. What is it that draws you to the work of sex positivity?
Well, for me, it wasn't something that I was ever supposed to do. It was, you know, the blog and all of the writing about sex was a fluke. It was done at the time, you know, for my own sort of expression. And then when it got popular and I started building an audience, and then I got fired because my employer found out what I did in my own personal time, that was really actually when it became an issue and a platform. Because to me, it was like, if I were a man, this probably would not have happened, number one. Number two, it's funny, she talks about her mother and her grandmother. And for me, I think about my nieces, because I want them to grow up in a world where they're not afraid of being called a slut or a whore, because they're empowered, because they're sexual, because they want to live their life a certain way. Because for me, and I think part of the whole thing with sex, and especially with women, is that there's so much shame for us, whether you're religious or not, in terms of if you're a nice girl, then you can't enjoy sex. And even with your husband or your boyfriend, if you're too slutty, then how did you get there? So there's never really a compromise for women with sex. It's either you're this sort of like seductress slash, you know, slut, or you're that Puritan sort of motherly. There's not an in-between, whereas men are given that in-between. And so for me, I feel like women should have a platform where they're not afraid to talk about any portion of sex, whether they're very experimental, whether they're not. It's just, it's not something that we're given an option to do. And I think that's important.
That's the virgin whore dichotomy, yeah. Right? So is there something in Whore magazine that you've been working with, kind of graying the lines between the virgin and the whore?
Well, I think sort of everything that we do is about that, because one of the main points of the magazine is to actually create an opportunity for women to tell their actual story about what they've gone through. So it's not, you know, I'm completely sexually empowered and I have a great sex life and whatever. For most people, that's just not true. There's a lot of complexity and a lot of different issues going on with that. But we create an opportunity for them to, you know, to explore that, to tell their story, to have other women react to what they're saying about it. Because, you know, all of us have been a virgin and a whore in our life at some point, in every way. So we can be in even the same night, in the same moment. There's times when I've been fully in the throes of delighting in my erotic desire, and then suddenly there's something that comes over me, and I suddenly want to just have this, I want to, like, sit on the porch with them and drink a cup of tea and suddenly be very pure.
Right.
Right.
And cuddle. Right.
Moment. Yes, exactly. Or also just kind of have the sense of interacting with them that is in a complete contrast to what we've just been doing, to kind of keep the excitement and the full range of what's possible within me as part of the experience.
Right. And pleasure and connection can be both very innocent and passionate. And it doesn't have to be, you know, like you are this person and then you're stuck in that expression of desire. So what are some of the things that you are writing about and talking about? What are some of the issues that you're trying to bring to people's attention?
Well, a lot of it is history. We're exploring what women have lived throughout history and the women who have not been. Well, obviously, history is told by the winners. And so most history that gets told is about white men and power struggles. So there's that. And then even when you do delve into women's history, feminism and women's history is still plagued by the need to have role models. So they tend to only speak about the women who have sort of achieved respectable things, whereas there were all these women throughout history who achieved miraculous things and also lived very wildly and tested boundaries and explored all kinds of things. So a lot of the magazine is about exploring that and exploring those lives. So for instance, in the third issue coming up, we're doing a whole style section about the garçon, which was this look that developed in Paris in Berlin in the 20s and 30s. That was all these underground women who would slick back their hair and wear men's suits and hang out in these clubs and salons. And sometimes they were lesbians. Sometimes they just hung out with women. Sometimes they were prostitutes. Sometimes they were just artists, or all of the above. And it was this rich, gorgeous, expressive scene of like sexy gender bending that occurred then. And so a lot of people don't know that that existed. You know, it's like homosexual rights is not a new thing. It's had different moments throughout history when it's been explored. So, and the Nazis came along and, you know, unfortunately put quite a damper on what was a very fun scene.
Damn Nazis. Oh, man. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, because it's funny how we always think that we reinvented drag kings. Mm-hmm. We are the ones that invented gay rights with Stonewall. That was the first moment, right? But that it has been a struggle. People have been struggling with their sexuality and their identities and, you know, being sexually authentic for probably since we invented repression, which I think that may have been 10,000 years ago.
Well, and actually there is in, I believe it's the Aztecs. They actually had a list sort of similar to, you know, you have to say 5 Hail Marys and, you know, do 2 rosary beads because you've sinned in this particular way. They actually had a list of certain sexual acts and how they would, what you would have to pay as a fine for them.
You mean number of rosary beads or actually payment, actually like gold coins?
Yeah. So, and sodomy was lower on the list than, what was it, than oral sex. It's very strange. Their list doesn't really make very much sense. But
and sodomy is anal sex?
Yes. So they listed all of the different sexual acts. Like sometimes something as silly as actually sucking on someone's earlobe was actually on the list as a sexual act that could be fined.
Whoa.
I know. And they actually have the same thing in China, but in China it was more about keeping the balance of your own character and integrity as a man. So just be aware that if you do this, then you'll get 50 points off of your integrity balance. And there's sometimes really strange things like telling dirty stories to your wife.
To your wife?
Mm-hmm. Well, because it might inspire her, you know, wicked thoughts. And, you know, she might become too passionate of a woman. So.
Oh, not too passionate of a woman.
God knows we would never want a woman to be too passionate.
Well, it's interesting how we seem to have this story that we invent about what we need women to be. You know, that we're constantly suppressing female sexuality and we're constantly like, and then we're saying, well, women aren't sexual creatures. They don't like sex that much. You know, women don't initiate sex. Like that is a part of the story. Mm. You know, with female sexuality.
But you know what? That's a part of the story, actually, mainly more in the American culture. In other countries, that's not necessarily the norm. So I find it interesting that it's especially in America. In other societies, they're given a bit more leeway. Granted, not all of them. I mean, we can go to other ones where they're being stoned to death and, you know, not allowed to leave the house. But in our particular society where we're supposed to be so cultured and we're supposed to be one of the best, we still have serious issues when it comes to what a woman's place is and the fact that that statement even exists.
So let's talk about some of the ways that we bring your work, sex positivity, sex positive feminism, out into the world. You are creating an event coming up on Thursday, the 19th of January. You have all sorts of feminists and performers and gender benders and dancers. Tell me about the event that you're creating.
First and foremost, the thing I'd like to mention in terms of how women are seen and engaging in their own sexual decisions, it's a party for the release of the third issue of the magazine, Bang Bang, Whore Magazine Speaks. But we're basically writing a whole article about debunking the cougar myth. That just because older women in greater numbers and also have throughout history enjoyed being with younger men from time to time, that there doesn't need to be a dismissive characterization of that experience. And so we're exploring the cougar myth in all different kinds of ways, including the party. We, Fleur de Lis, will be our amazing auctioneer, and she will be auctioning off 2 very, very, very sexy cougars for the delight of the audience.
Aren't you also auctioning off whatever the corollary, you know, whoever's the younger man?
Yeah, isn't it a cougar and the puppy?
He's a very sexy puppy.
So the whole cougar thing isn't like a new thing. This has been happening throughout history. Is that right?
Absolutely. Oh, yes, indeed. In fact, during the Roman era, there was a brief period in time where actually married women had quite a bit of freedom and they were expected to have lots of extramarital affairs because love, the Romans didn't like love. Love caused problems, but lots of fun sex and engagements that they enjoyed. And so a lot of these older Roman matrons were running around with the young nubile hotties that were working in the spas and whatnot.
There's another point to that beyond the fact the whole cougar thing. I think what a lot of people don't take into consideration is the fact that women mature sexually more in their 30s. And after that, whereas men have that peak in their younger 20s. Mm-hmm. So it does make sense that when you reach that point that, yeah, you would kind of look for someone that's right about your same sort of reciprocal sexual energy. So I don't necessarily, I think it's also age. I think women get more comfortable, but there is something that happens in your 30s is truly different than it was in your 20s.
So, and there's a feminist aspect to that. I mean, this is the theory I'm putting forth, and I'm open to hearing people's ideas about this, whether they agree with me or not. But there's something interesting that as we move into a sort of accepted feminism, we now have two generations that have grown up with it. And as women are very sort of have come into their own, they don't even have to call themselves feminist anymore. They just kind of are. There is something about the younger generation of men where they have also kind of embodied it without having to think about it so much. So some, a lot of the conflicts that I've experienced with older men, I just don't exist with younger men. It's sort of they're like, yeah, you're really smart and you've done really amazing things and you're really strong. That's great. Like, they don't have an issue with it. I mean, I'm speaking in broad generalizations, of course, but there is a slight trend towards an appreciation of a woman who has a great amount of confidence and strength and talent and ability. And there's actually that becomes sexy as opposed to threatening.
And also, instead of having to ask a man to help you and would you do the dishes or would you be willing to cook? I mean, oftentimes younger men are much more likely to like to cook, for instance, or many other, especially men from California. I just love it.
Well, I also think that part of it is that the younger generation of men are being raised a little differently. And so I think that part of it, I think there's a lot of single moms. And so to a certain extent, I think they have a much different appreciation for women and respect for women, especially when they see it in their own mother. So I think that that's also a part of it. Whereas with older and in relationships with men that are older, there's that threat of job. There's that threat of ego, where to a certain extent, most men that are older broadly have a hard time dating a woman that's more successful than them or has a little more power than them in that dynamic. And so I think that younger men don't necessarily have that. They don't necessarily get their security from that. So they can appreciate it versus exactly what she said, being threatened by it.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate. If I'm a man, I'm concerned that if I go after feminists, they might actually be man-hating feminists. Do you think that feminists are man-hating? Do you think that I would have a bad experience if I was trying to flirt with one?
Well, that's one of my favorite questions. It's definitely a fun one to open up at a bar setting. Of course, there are man-hating feminists. There are man-hating women. I have seen a lot of women really hate their husbands. And, you know, they go to church and they vote Republican and would never in a million years call themselves a feminist. So hating is just bad on any level. I think that it can be difficult for some men to engage with a woman who has a very strong understanding of her own social and political presence in the world. There can, you know, be some issues with that. And I recognize that. I think it's important and rewarding that as we achieve a greater balance with all of our, with each one of us, that our lives actually improve and there's greater abundance and greater benefit. And there's a greater opportunity for the person's unique individuality to be expressed and recognized and enjoyed. Now that, you know, sometimes that it's challenging and you have to work through that. And so, you know, I'd say it's up to you. If you enjoy, you want to explore, you want to challenge things, you really want to have an opportunity to really engage in what actual equality means, which I think is very exciting. Like when you feel it, it actually feels like you're expanding with loveliness. It feels really good. It actually does. And like I said, sometimes it takes some work, but I think it's incredibly, incredibly worth it. So yeah, I say flirt with feminists, do it.
Yeah. Benefits of flirting with feminists.
Well, I think that there's such a nasty sort of connotation that comes with the word feminist. I don't necessarily call myself a feminist, but I am highly impassioned about women's issues. I think it depends on the woman. I think it depends on the circumstances. But essentially, I think that boils down to that whole sort of, is a woman being a bitch for being assertive and having certain boundaries? To a certain extent, feminists are put into that category because women are supposed to be malleable. We're supposed to be nice. We're supposed to be accommodating.
Modest, polite.
Right. Even at the expense of our own selves and our own value. So I think that it's a difficult question because to a certain extent, it depends on the person and what they expect out of the woman. Because I've known a lot of feminists who you can have conversations with and yeah, they don't consider themselves feminists and it's totally fine. It's when you are inappropriate that it really becomes an issue, because they're not going to take it. They're going to let you know that whatever it is that was done was inappropriate.
Oh, you're saying that if someone is inappropriate to the feminist or any woman who feels empowered to speak up for herself, that that's when you might get a little inkling. And then so I think maybe oftentimes when people think, oh, you think I'm doing something wrong, well, you're the one that's wrong. Getting defensive and saying, well, you're just a feminazi.
Exactly. Or you're a man hater, or you clearly must be a lesbian. And it's like, no, I just really didn't want you to touch me without asking permission. You know, I'm sorry if that makes you feel like I'm a lesbian or a man hater. So I think to a certain extent, sometimes that name gets thrown around by men who don't find women as responsive as they would like.
Oh, but which brings us actually to another question that I was about ready to ask, actually. Okay, so I think that sometimes people think that, you know, women who are feminists, maybe they're all lesbians, or they're frigid, or they hate pornography, or, you know, whatever it is, that they're sex negative, that feminism and sex negativity somehow go merrily hand in hand, marching off into the... Do you think, how do we deconstruct that? Like, what do we have to show that says, no, actually, feminism is juicy and dynamic and sexual and abundant?
Well, I think that that's what both Vanessa and I are doing or attempting to do, is that not only just with the magazine and with the blog, but also with the events that she's thrown and the event that she's, you know, helping me out with, our Big Bang Bang event at the Red Devil Lounge, is to, in the midst of being very clear and very specific that there is this, I don't want to say fight or battle, but we're
trying. Intellectual context.
Well, intellectual context, but we're really wanting to achieve something. We're wanting to achieve something very, very important, as a genuine equality, a genuine, you know, women's humanness is fully realized and fully valued. We are really trying to achieve that. And that is part of that. A huge part of that is sexuality and expression and art and the intellect and the engagement of conversation and the exploration of ideas. That's very, very important. And so these are all ways to go around this. So when, as we're going to do the show, we're going to start the show off with a reading. Vanessa will be reading. It'll be lovely. We have Dusty Rose, Allison Moon, who's amazing and writes the Lesbian Werewolf series. Right?
So ow.
But you know, it's a sense of, so all the readings, some of them will be really intense and really serious, some of them will be really smart, some of them will be sort of just fun and silly and engaging, and there's all different ways to approach something. So we'll start with the reading, we'll start off kind of quiet, people can sit and listen, and then we're going to gear up to the big show of the night, and we've got two amazing bands, Fox and Woman, that is like three women singing harmonies. It's incredibly melodic and intense, but they have such rhythm and power to them. It's incredible. And yes, going to have drag artists. I'm going to have a sexy stewardess do the airstrip from the 60s. We're going to have Dottie Lux, amazing burlesque clown, queer queen of the Shimmy Shake. And then El Radio Fantastique, which is this incredible band that started sort of taking on the old 1930s radio shows as a style and as a singing style, and then have expanded that out with like salsa and rumba and wild horns and sexy dancers, and that all of these things contribute to a sexier, more profound, more intelligent, more forward-thinking life. And we invite people in to come and celebrate us with us and enjoy this, so we can see like, yes, come join our wee little revolution. It's fun.
Right, like it's pleasurable, it's fun, it's sexy. Right, exactly. And it's smart. Wee! And sexiness and smart are not diametrically opposed in any way. You do not have to pretend to be stupid to be sexy. Because, you know, sometimes when they're like, this is my sexy voice, it also kind of sounds a little bit stupid or lispy or something, you know what I mean? So it's interesting that we have kind of that in the back of our consciousness.
Actually, just a little point to that, just to confirm that. Marilyn Monroe, the sex goddess of the 20th century, who had one of those voices that everybody knows is now famous, it's the Marilyn Monroe voice, was the mistress of a president, never in her life had an orgasm.
Oh, Marilyn. I mean, that's so sad that the sex kittens and the sex goddesses, you know, sometimes really don't get the whole, like, don't actually get sex or good sex or, I mean, not that we're judging Marilyn Monroe's sex. I mean, if you never have an orgasm and you enjoy the sex, we're not judging you. We would be happy to educate you to have whatever, some toys or clitoral G-spot stimulate, something good. Because there's lots of stuff that you could stimulate that might help you. But anyway, oh man, the person who had the sex reality television show, pinup model, super sexy.
Oh, Anna Nicole Smith.
Right. She didn't have sex for like years and years during her whole thing. It's just, so like people who are like sexy, like aren't actually connecting with their body. They're not connecting with each other. They're not, it's not about what you look. Sexiness is not, it's not about what you look like. It's about like your ability to connect with other people and your body and pleasure.
But I think also for women, especially regardless of how sexy you are or you're viewed, I think for a lot of women, it's very hard to connect sexually at different points. So regardless of what you look like or how smoldering you look like, to a certain extent, unless you really understand your body and understand yourself and are really comfortable with sex, it's not going to come easily, no matter how you're seen. So I think that that's part of the interesting sort of dichotomy with the sex kittens and, you know, that it's like they're supposed to be these, you know, sexual creatures that are, fulfill all these fantasies, but in reality, that's a look that they have and that's a character that they portray. And you don't actually know. Marilyn Monroe is very troubled. I mean, I could understand how to a certain extent that would go. Anna Nicole Smith, my God. You know, I mean, there were some serious issues there. So I think to a certain extent, in order for sex and sexuality, you also have to look at where that's based and where that comes from. And I think so much of that for women is mental.
It's so much pressure, I think, sometimes to be like a sexy, attractive woman in the world. Not that I think we should cry for Argentina right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. Oh, I'm so pretty. It's so hard. But sometimes it's a lot
of. It is. Oh, let me tell you, my life is so difficult. Being so beautiful.
Well, you do get hassled a lot, you know, and people talk to you on the street and you don't want to be rude to them, but you don't really want to talk to the guy with one tooth on the picnic bench right now because you're busy and doing something. But however, you stop and have a little conversation because he's like, hey, baby, I need to tell you about whatever it is that I'm telling you about. And you're like, yeah.
No, it is. That's actually something I want to explore. I'm planning an article about this in the future, is that really to do actually explore that, that when you do have a sexy ass as a woman and you do, you are the image that people project onto of their fantasy of what sexuality is or beauty or desire or, you know, whatever, that comes with it its own whole host of conflicts and difficulties. And we're very judgmental. We have a society that's very resistant to allowing people to discuss that because it does, you know, you're like, oh, life is so hard for you. You're being arrogant. Da-da-da-da-da. Oh, I wish I had it as hard as you do. La, la, la. And people get very dismissive of that, which actually tends to, can create slut culture. And what I see is slut culture is more women who are sexualized and don't really get to embody their own sexuality and enjoy it and express it properly. So it creates slut culture because these women are so projected onto and they're never given an opportunity to understand how to navigate that. Some people figure it out and a lot of people don't. So I think that's a whole other issue, but it's actually funny. I also write a column for the SF Weekly Exhibitionist. And just this week, I was writing about how I have been an avid lover of male beauty my entire life. Like, I've been a bit of a dog. I've actually, like, pursued models. I'm like, you, runway, come here. You know, I've actually had moments where I looked at in a particular dry spell or whatever, and I'll look at an advertisement of some really hot guy, and it actually makes me angry. I'm like, I want that. You know, I do. I've been kind of like what men tell me, they're like, sort of way, like this real desire for the just beauty of the physical form. So it's interesting to me that in my life, all of a sudden, I have found the most exciting, engaged sexuality with men who really would not be considered beautiful at all. Mm-hmm. But they do have a certain kind of beauty. And that's, you know, I've also enjoyed being with the beautiful men. But there's something about the gaze and what you can see that's very desirable that when you actually get up close and personal, it doesn't matter all that much. You know, there are a lot of different other qualities that come into play that become vastly more important. So I was, for this sort of new year, for 2012, I was like, let's celebrate all our flaws or wrinkles or cellulite or funny faces or odd forms and really, you know, have somebody really appreciate and value and delight in them and then do that for each other. To enjoy what sex is actually really all about, which is it's just loving the body no matter what that body is.
Well, and you're so close that you can't really see all the stuff anyway. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. And, you know, perfect abs look really nice in a photograph, but when you actually get up and touch them, they can be nice. But, you know, belly can be really sexy, too.
No, totally. Really, sometimes it can be hard. And then certainly surgically augmented hardness can be sort of alarming every now and then. So honestly, and then loving someone just the way they are, especially if you can love yourself and love the other person in the moment, like that's where you're really going to find pleasure.
Oh, yeah. I think in terms of connection, in terms of sex, it's one of those things where I think that you derive the most sexual pleasure from the people that you truly connect with, regardless of what they look like. For me, I mean, yes. I mean, there was a time that I was totally into the sport fuck. It was, you are this hot and I want to have sex with you. And I went through that phase for a little while until I realized that looks are only skin deep. And if you can't have a conversation with someone, or you really have nothing in common with them, that sexiness and that factor of attractiveness just goes down. So to me, ultimately, it's kind of like what Ginger said, what people would not think as the most attractive human being are the ones that ultimately do a lot for me as well, because it's not what you look like. It's really who you are as a human being, because there have been people that I've had sex with that I would have assumed would have been very skilled due to what they look like. And no. Was unfortunate.
There's really only one thing about a man that needs to be hard in that particular moment, and sometimes not even then.
And it could be his finger.
Exactly.
Or both of them.
Hard abs, yeah, whatever. You know, I like the other hard things.
Right. I was thinking of one of my sweethearts in college, and he just, something about him made my soul smolder. And we went on a date where we walked around San Francisco and we went to St. Patrick's Cathedral and we made out ferociously. And then we went to the MoMA and then I pushed him up against a chain link fence and nearly ripped off his clothes. And then we were in the art garden and just couldn't keep our hands off of each other, even though there were children around, and just appalling, making out all over.
Amazing. I love that. I love that. I love those moments. Oh, they're the best.
Right. But he was not something that you would think of like a looker. Mm. Like he was like a funny Irish, crooked teeth, funny little cap, you know, like funny little smile, like the whole thing, like totally not like, you know, not any kind of model, anything, but like he just like, you know, everything about him just was like, and we had the greatest sex. I mean, we had the kind of sex where you like fall, like the thing falls over, you fall onto the floor, suddenly the futon flips over and you're both on the ground, but you don't even stop for a second. You know what I mean? It's just, it is on.
Yay.
So yeah, exactly. And all of this in the context of sex positive feminism, ladies and gentlemen. So the event is at the Red Devil Lounge. Mm-hmm. It's Thursday the 19th and it's called Bang Bang
Whore Magazine Speaks. Tickets are on sale right now. If you buy them in advance, they're cheaper. They're only $12.15 at the door. And we're going to have magazines there. We're going to have prizes. It's a great, beautiful bar if you haven't been. It has a very old school Rococo speakeasy kind of feel about it. It's really, really lovely. Lots of fun and a proper bar. You will not get a drink in a plastic glass.
That's nicer.
Isn't it, though? Yeah. Makes such a difference.
And how can people find your blog, Vanessa?
I actually just launched my new site. So fleurdelisf.com is where you'll want to go. Also, if you Google San Francisco Sluttiest Blogger, I'll come up and you'll get my old site, but it redirects you. But fleurdelisf.com is the easiest way to find me.
Anything else? Sex positive feminism, sexiness?
I just hope everybody has a great new year. And if you haven't been having great sex for a while, I just sincerely hope you will begin having it.
Yes. Play with your clitoris. Just try that.
Yes.
That always helps. You know, you can do it yourself. Be fully empowered to touch any part of yourself. You're not taking it away from your partner. And just focus on the sensations and, you know, don't feel afraid to tell your partner what to do, because I'm sure that the reason that they're there is because they want to help. You know, they want to please you, make you happy.
Absolutely. That would be. And we want to please you and make you happy. So we'd very much love to see you on the 19th. Come and celebrate with us. Yes. Come be excited by us. Come be moved by us. Come and see some great art and some great beauty. We would love to see your faces.
Excellent. Thank you so much, ladies.
You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.